Welcome to the Sooners Extra Podcast, powered by the Oklahoma. The Sooners Extra Podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's, the home of handmade-to-order chicken, salads, and more than a dozen mild-to-wild sauces. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today. I'm Ryan Aber, here as always with Abby Betterman. And Abby, signing day is finally in the rearview mirror. A little bit different. This isn't it's not the signing day I grew up with.
Nope.
You're a little bit younger, so this is you can adapt a little bit better. But the February signing day is not what it once was. Oklahoma only had two signees, and neither of them...
No surprises.
There was much drama around. One of them, I think a lot of us thought that he had signed in December when he committed on December signing day. That would be Joshua Eaton.
Yeah, I definitely thought that. I guess I was confused, but I definitely thought that he had signed because he committed on signing day. So I thought that that's just how that worked.
You would have thought, but you would have been wrong. Joshua Eaton signed in December, committed in December, signed in February. The other one, Reggie Grimes, who there was some speculation that he was going to wind up going elsewhere. He shut that down and wound up signing with the Sooners, which I think most people expected after he'd been committed for so long. Well, not so long. He committed in late November. But, Abby, let's talk a little bit about this class. First of all, Reggie Grimes, that's a big get for them for a lot of reasons. One, the geography of it, to go into SEC country and get a player like that whose Rivals has him as a four-star kid, weak side defensive end. He's they've got him at 6'5", 240 pounds. It's a lot of size. Seems to fit in what Alex Grinch wants to do defensively. But also just the optics of it, to go into SEC country, to get one of the top players out of the state of Tennessee for the second straight year after they got Woody Washington a year ago. So a really important recruiting win for the Sooners on Wednesday.
Yeah, definitely. Especially, you know, like you said, since there wasn't a lot of drama or really any additions or anything, important to hang on to the one that they had and that, you know, those positives in that recruitment, like you said. But yeah, no, a pretty solid class for OU overall. Rivals has it as the number 15 recruiting class in the country. So pretty solid spot for OU, I would think.
Yeah, I think, what was that, number two in the Big 12 behind Texas?
Yes.
Which, Texas always seems to win recruiting, win signing day, win recruiting battles. And I know there's a lot of guys that OU's really wanted that Oklahoma, that Texas has wound up getting. Heck, there was, the one this year whose name is currently escaping, right? Alfred Collins, the kid from Bastrop, Texas, defensive end. Oklahoma really wanted him. They felt good about him at one point, but wound up staying home, going to the Longhorns. But at the same time, this isn't a new thing that Texas would be ahead of Oklahoma in recruiting, and there's only a couple spots. I think Texas is 13th on that Rivals list.
Yes.
But the biggest thing is to look at how many SEC programs are ahead of Oklahoma in that list, and you've got seven
Georgia,
SEC programs in the top 10.
Alabama.
The only non-SEC programs in the top 10 for Rivals being Clemson at number two, Ohio State at number five, and then Oregon at number nine. A little bit surprising to see Oregon there, although they do sometimes fare pretty well. But Oklahoma needs to be up probably a little bit higher than 15 to do what they want to do to make that next step. At the same time, I think with this class, I'm not going to raise up too many alarms, because you always looked at this one as a little bit of a transitional class after the class that they had last year, bringing in Spencer Rattler, who was obviously, one of the most coveted quarterbacks in the country, 3 5-star receivers. You figured they would take a little bit of a step back this year, but next year, that 2021 class, 2022, they really need to take some big steps forward.
Yeah, and also, I mean, it's important to get, you know, the most talented guys possible going into the class. But then it's also, you know, what Oklahoma does with these guys, how they develop them, things like that. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't tend to put, like, a whole lot of stock in ratings because it helps, I think, but then it's what you do with them and how you use these guys that I think is more important in the long run.
Well, I mean, you're right, but, and I say this all the time when I talk about recruiting rankings, because people say, oh, recruiting rankings don't matter. You know, it doesn't matter what the guy's ranked when he comes in, as long as he turns into a solid player when he's there. And that's right in the very narrow scope of things.
Yeah.
Like, there's 5-star players. I mean, heck, we've seen him at Oklahoma. You know, the Trey Matuire comes to mind, and some of these other guys that have come in and they haven't been the players that everybody thought. And then you see other guys who, you know, weren't heavily recruited at all. I mean, heck, we saw Baker Mayfield. He was a no-star guy, mm-hmm. a guy who didn't have any offers of note. He had a, you know, Washington State offer coming out of high school, and became, you know, the best quarterback in Oklahoma history. So in the very narrow scope of things, that's right that recruiting rankings don't matter. But I think what a lot of people overlook is that overall they very much do matter.
Yeah.
The team rankings, when you look at a composite ranking of a class, it does matter, because it shows time and time again that the teams that finish in the top 5 in recruiting are the ones that are making the playoffs, or the ones that are winning national championships. So it's hard to deny on the, you know, big scale level that recruiting rankings don't matter.
And you'd also think that, just like for the optics of it, you know, the big 5 and 4-star guys probably want to go to where the big other 4 and 5-star guys before them go. So I think the optics of it, you know, matter too.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So, but I think Oklahoma's class for 2021 and 22 will be better. They've got to get a big-time quarterback in the 2021 class. They didn't have that this year. I know they feel good about Chandler Morris, but he's more of a project type of guy. Caleb Williams, I think, is the 5-star guy that they're going after for the 2021 class really heavily after Brock Vandegrift decommitted out of that class. They've
now
only
committed
to
Georgia, I believe.
Yeah, now committed to Georgia. Oklahoma's only got the 3 2021 commitments in offensive lineman Colin Montgomery from down in Houston, Ethan Downs, a defensive end from Weatherford, and Cody Jackson, a wide receiver from Richmond, Texas. So that's a good start. But I think you're going to start seeing some names added to those lists and see them start stacking up some more recruits before long. I think that 2021 class has a chance, if things fall together, to be a really good one for the Sooners.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and they're already on the board for 2022. But, yeah, I think that 2021 class, like you said, it'll be important for them to bring in some bigger name guys.
Yeah, and they do have the one commitment from 2022. We won't spend too much time talking about him, because who knows what's going to happen. You know, a couple years down the road, that's a long time to stay committed once you go through the recruiting process, although certainly a good thing. But we're going to take a break there. We're going to come back on the other side with more OU recruiting talk, and then in the final segment, some non-football talk. Once again, this is the Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. Welcome back to the Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. I'm Ryan Aber here with Abby Bitterman. And Abby, spend a little bit more time talking about this 2020 class that Oklahoma signed now that it's completely in the rearview mirror. Who is the guy on this class that you feel like is going to have the biggest impact on the field for the Sooners in 2020?
Well, I mean, you wrote about this for Thursday's paper.
Yes.
I'm getting all my days confused. And I would say that I think it's Perrion Winfrey, just because I think that OU is going to need a lot of help on the defensive line. And he's a guy who is not coming out. He's a community college guy, so has a little bit of experience, not at the D1 level, but a little bit of a higher level, and probably quicker for him to make that jump. And I would say him. I have a number 2 pick, but I'm going to let you pick first before I give that.
Okay. I'm going to go with Bryson Washington, the safety. He's got the size at 6'3" to make an impact. Safety was such a spot where Oklahoma didn't have much depth this year. Secondary is a place where freshmen can make impacts pretty quickly, as we've seen the past couple of years for the Sooners, and we'll see how that secondary winds up looking. But, several of those guys that were signed to play in the secondary are going to wind up being impact players for the Sooners in 2020. I think a couple of them are going to wind up redshirting. It's hard to pick out which ones will do that. But I think Bryson Washington, to me, looks the most ready out of those guys based on his size, the film, the job he's able to do in coverage. I think that he's got a chance to have an immediate impact. Was that your number 2 guy or somebody else?
No, mine was actually Marvin Mims. Just, seeing how much the freshman receivers got to play this year, maybe not always having the biggest impact in games, but definitely, making touchdown catches, playing in big games like against Baylor. I think that in that receiving core, freshmen do really get a chance. And so I think that, seeing the impact he had at his high school team and how he's the number one receiver in the state of Texas catching yards.
Not only in the state of Texas, I believe nationally, he's the most productive receiver nationally in high school football history.
Yeah, so you would think
history. He should be able to translate at least some of that into the Division I level. Now, obviously, I don't expect him to put up those kind of numbers.
Yes.
I don't expect him to be even their number one receiver this year. I think that'll probably wind up being a guy like Charleston Rambo, possibly one of those guys that were freshmen this year. Although I probably would have said, I don't know. I think Jaden Hazelwood has a chance to be that guy if everything falls right. We'll see what kind of progress Theo Weiss, Trajan Bridges make, although Bridges could be out for a few games to start the next season. I don't think either of the graduate transfers that they brought on board, Theo Howard from UCLA, who's got some injury issues, he's got to deal with. Obi Obiallo, a great name,
great
by
name.
The way.
Great name.
From Marshall, who, I think a lot of people have downplayed the possibility of him being an impact guy because of the numbers he put up last year without realizing that he was hurt a lot of that and didn't do that in very many games. I think he's got a chance to be a pretty productive member of this receiving core. I think he could be a guy that could fit into that sort of Nick Basquin, Lee Morris type of role. Mm-hmm. So I don't think he's going to be a star. I don't think he's going to be the game breaker that, say, CeeDee Lamb was. But he's got a chance to contribute. But Marvin Mims, to me, is a really interesting guy to see how quickly he's able to make an impact for the Sooners, and I think it could be fairly quickly. It seems to me that the two spots that freshmen can have the quickest impact at, and you don't feel like they're going to be overwhelmed physically, are receiver and secondary, safety and corner. And I think that's why this list winds up having a lot of those guys and a guy, like you mentioned, in Perrion Winfrey, who has been out of high school a few years and has a little bit of experience playing college football, now not at the D1 level, like you mentioned. But I think, to me, Washington is probably the safest bet. Or no, let me rephrase that. Marvin Mims, I think, is the safest bet among freshmen to have a quick impact. Winfrey is the guy to me that has the highest ceiling amongst, and I said freshmen, I meant incoming guys, new faces, newcomers. Winfrey is the guy that probably has the highest ceiling among those guys, because if Winfrey can figure everything out, he's got a chance to be not only a really good defensive lineman for Oklahoma, but has a chance to be a, you know, first round pick caliber player.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the reverse side, who do you think is most likely to redshirt?
Well, I mean, I would throw in, I would make it pretty much every offensive lineman that they signed for a couple reasons. Mm-hmm. One, I talked about the secondary guys and receivers being ready to go physically. Offensive linemen are generally the farthest away physically from being able to contribute. Sometimes you can get in guys, you know, we saw it with Creed Humphrey a few years ago. Had Oklahoma had some injuries there, if Eric Wren had been hurt, they would have inserted Creed Humphrey as a true freshman, and I think felt good about that. Those guys are really, really rare, though. And, you know, looking down at the list of guys that they sign on the offensive line, I'd probably say a guy like Noah Nelson would be the most likely of those guys to redshirt. But I think all the offensive linemen are going to redshirt unless something major happens there.
Especially with so much experience
coming back. They really return their offensive line intact. They do lose R.J. Proctor, but Eric Swenson, who is sort of a on-again, off-again starter there with Proctor, comes back. So I would anticipate that that group would be the ones who start next year, and that they'll try to save all of these guys a year of eligibility through redshirting, but we'll see what happens. What about you?
Well, I mean, as you wrote, if Chandler Morris doesn't redshirt, something went really wrong. And to me, that just hits the nail on the head. I think that seems like an easy choice for OU. Probably like a, not saying he is of the caliber of Spencer Rattler, but like a Spencer Rattler situation where he'll get in like late in a game and maybe throw like a pass, but probably
not going to see
a lot of Chandler Morris.
You know, playing late in that Missouri State game, maybe.
Yeah.
Early on, I'm not sure we see him much beyond that. Maybe against,
I would not think.
Maybe against Kansas if things get really out of hand there at the end.
Really out of hand.
One of those things. Well, it is Kansas. It could happen.
That's true. It often does.
So we'll see. But, yeah, that's as good a pick as any. And, yes, if Chandler Morris sees the field in any way other than mop-up duty in a game or two, something has gone disastrously wrong. Or here's the order that – or Tanner Mordecai decides to transfer at some point, which is a possibility, and they have to have Chandler Morris at least somewhat ready, sort of like what we saw with Austin Kendall a few years ago when Oklahoma didn't have a backup quarterback that they could use that had any that was on scholarship or that was not a true freshman. Austin Kendall had to burn a redshirt year that year because of that. Now, that said, now I think you might sort of hold off and maybe you can get by with Chandler Morris only playing in the four games and try to manipulate that a little bit, whether it's with Tanner Schaefer or somebody else. Because I think it would – no, of course, I think Austin Kendall would have been better served redshirting that year versus the next year when he redshirted after losing the starting job. But that's going to be something interesting to watch. But in my mind, there's no doubt that Spencer Rattler is the starting quarterback next year. And there's no doubt that they would really, really like to redshirt Chandler Morris.
Yeah. And I mean, as we've talked about too, you know, anything could happen. But Oklahoma lately has had really good luck keeping their quarterbacks healthy for the most part. So you would think that even if something happens with Tanner Mordecai, that they still have a good shot to be able to redshirt Chandler Morris, especially with that 4-game rule, you know, that gives you like some wiggle room.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, all right, we're going to take one last break here on the Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. We'll be back with some non-football talk for
there
a few minutes at least.
There are other sports.
Yes, there are other sports at OU for a few minutes at least. Once again, this is the Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. Welcome back to the Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. I'm Ryan Aber here with Abby Bitterman. And Abby, let's do some non-football talk real quick. Oklahoma hung in with Texas Tech. Men's basketball hung in with Texas Tech the other day down in Lubbock. Wasn't quite able to pull it out. Had some struggles there over the last 4 or 5 minutes of that game.
Mm-hmm.
How disappointing was that for them? And how important does that make Saturday's game against West Virginia? Because Oklahoma has got to start winning some of these games against the top teams in the conference to keep themselves in the NCAA tournament picture.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really important that OU go at least 500 in conference. And that means if you can't pull some of these out on the road, that you've got to win them all at home. And I mean, even when you're playing a tough team like West Virginia, I think that, you know, losing in that close one against Texas Tech just makes Saturday all the more important. Kind of like we were talking to Austin Reeves yesterday, and like he said, they gave themselves an opportunity to win, but the last 5 minutes they didn't play the way they wanted to. And that kind of tells you all you need to know. He was the only person that scored in the last 5 minutes, and kind of that last minute of the game, OU put up some shots, none of them went in, and they had to start fouling, and that kind of just sealed it for Texas Tech. So, you know, Austin Reeves and Brady Manick really, scoring-wise, did most of the work and kind of kept OU in it, especially Austin Reeves late in the game. But, you know, that one, I would think, definitely hurts when you give yourself a chance on the road. And not that you think about this in the moment, but knowing that they have to come back on Saturday and play a team like West Virginia. And then also they had to take a very long bus ride back after that loss. So
yeah,
not the ideal way to do things.
They would have liked to have had that game be a little bit earlier in the night.
Mm-hmm.
Because then they probably could have caught their flight back and been okay. Unfortunately, by the time that that game got over, it had started the precipitation had started to fall here in Oklahoma mm-hmm. City. It became snowy and a little bit icy. The plane couldn't leave.
All night bus ride.
And then you get an all night bus ride in the snow and ice. Through West Texas, which is not fun. I've actually made that drive in the snow a couple years ago when Oklahoma played down in Lubbock football-wise, and we woke up in Amarillo the next day and it was snowing, so we had to make that drive back, but glad that they made it back okay. Those things can go one of two ways. They can be bonding experiences or they can just be absolutely miserable. Oklahoma baseball felt that a few years ago when a good chunk of its team missed its flights back from Atlanta to Oklahoma City after a baseball series out in Georgia. And a lot of them, including Kyler Murray at the time, had to take a bus ride from Atlanta to Norman.
How did only part of them miss the flight?
Some of them were able to get through security in time to get to the flight. A large chunk of them were not able to get through security in time to
and they just said, we're getting on the plane?
Well, I mean, they didn't have a choice.
I assume they knew.
It wasn't a charter plane. This was not a charter situation.
That's true, yes.
The baseball team, when they fly, has to go the commercial route. So they had to, you know, wait in the TSA line with, you know, all the other folks.
Makes sense.
So that's where that landed. But yeah, a big chunk of them had to hang around. And I remember, I think their SID at the time was Brendan Flynn. Somebody had to be responsible for the players. And one of the adults in the room had to be the one to hang back. Brendan Flynn drew that short straw and wound up having to make that that bus ride back with them. So that was interesting. Really quick, before we wrap up,
yes,
Sherry Cole got her 500th win mm-hmm. on the road the other night in Kansas, then followed up with 501 at home against West Virginia. Some encouraging signs for Oklahoma women's basketball. Ani Yanusa being back, being the big one of them. They need Taylor Robertson to continue to keep rolling along at the three-point line. But Gabby Gregory has been the one who's really held this team together to this point. I know Taylor Robertson has done a lot scoring-wise. Maddie Williams has done a lot in a lot of areas. But Gabby Gregory, being a freshman, to do what she's been able to do is one of the big reasons that Oklahoma is still being talked about is a potential NCAA tournament mm-hmm. team. They've got to win some games here to keep that up. But certainly breaking out of that little bit of a slump and getting the 500th win and then beating West Virginia at home is a very encouraging sign for the Sooners.
Yeah, and an Oklahoma kid, Gabby Gregory is.
Yeah, she's from Tulsa, from yep. Holland Hall, if I'm not mistaken. So really good sign for Oklahoma for the future. They still need size. That's still an issue. It will continue to be an issue until they get that addressed. But certainly been some encouraging things for the Sooners this year. And then finally, Abby, one more thing to touch on. Softball team finally got going.
Yes, the softball season
baseball
started.
Baseball is still about a week away. Mm-hmm. I'm actually about to head over to baseball right now, but Patty Gasso's squad got started, and it looks like going to be another year where they're right there in the discussion for winning a national championship.
Yeah, started yesterday in the Puerto Vallarta College Challenge in Mexico with a 9-3 win over Nevada. They're actually about to play a second game that starts right now. But the story of the game was really, how their freshmen played. Kinsey Hansen had a team and game leading 4 RBIs. Other freshmen were really able to contribute. And so this team lost a really core group of players who had been starters and had a big impact for 4 years, who all graduated at the end of the 2019 season. So, OU softball, one of the top programs in the country every year, has no trouble reloading. And I think they kind of showed that yesterday, especially with their freshmen being the ones to step out and make that impact in that first game.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to follow them. OU baseball is really highly thought of this year. They'll start next week. We'll talk a little bit about Skip Johnson's team and their prospects for this year. Obviously, OU women's gymnastics is right now, I would say, the strong favorite. Mm-hmm. To repeat as national champions, and then men's gymnastics is right up there as well. I would anticipate them probably finishing as runner-ups this year. I think Stanford's going to be a little bit too tough to overcome, especially with what OU lost from last year's team. But some really exciting times in Norman for sports that don't involve football. Obviously, football gets the bulk of the attention and will continue to get the bulk of attention, but it'll be an interesting spring in Norman for sure. But thank you so much for joining the Sooners Extra podcast. Please check out our work every day at oklahoman.com and every morning in the Oklahoman for the best OU coverage anywhere. The Sooners Extra podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's, the home of handmade-to-order chicken, salads, and more than a dozen mild to wild sauces. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today.